Hi, this is Alina and Megan, and you're listening to Move Your Brain, Move Your Body podcast, where we dive into all things health, wellness, and fitness.
We are two certified athletic trainers, personal trainers, and nutrition coaches who met and graduated together from the University of Arkansas. And we want to do this podcast to spread our joy about treating our bodies well through nutrition, exercise, and knowledge.
Today on Move Your Brain, Move Your Body podcast, we have Steve Lintern. He is a certified athletic trainer, CSCS, and a PRT. He is currently the Director of Health and Performance for the Oilers, which is a hockey team based out of Oklahoma. And in his off season, he assists teaching master's level athletic training students at the medical school. He devotes time to working with his local fire department. Both Megan and I met Steve when he was working for Advanced Orthopedic Specialists in Fayetteville, Arkansas, and he also worked for club sports at the University of Arkansas while we were both in school getting our master's in athletic training. He interned with the Cleveland Browns in 2008-2009, and he just has so much experience with athletic training. He's worked with Olympic runners, world-class triathletes, MMA athletes, boxers, basketball players, anything, you can name it. Steve himself participates in long drive, which is basically hitting for golf as long and as hard as you can. And he does that for Long Drive for Heroes, and it raises awareness for PTSD. He's actually ranked in that sport. So this podcast is going to cover things from PRI to golf to so many different topics. And we are so excited to have him on today, and we know you're going to enjoy this episode.
All right. So today on the podcast, we welcome Steve Lintern. Steve, how are you doing today?
Doing great.
Great. Your name actually says Anna. So for a second there, that kind of threw me off, even though obviously I know your name. So tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, please.
I'm from Ohio. I've gotten to work with the Browns and the Razorbacks, which is where I met you guys, and got to work with the doctors for the Arkansas Razorbacks after that time. And then from there, I moved on over to Tulsa, Oklahoma, where I've been the head athletic trainer and director of sports and performance for the last, this is going on my seventh season. They're awesome. Tulsa Oilers. They're pretty much a ECHL team, like a minor league. You would consider them a double A team if you were to compare hockey to baseball.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah.
So did you play hockey when you were younger, or
no?
Do you play it?
Not
now?
At all. You could say that. I'm what hockey players would call a bender, where my ankles just bend anytime I get on ice skates.
Yeah.
Not really. Not worth a darn, but it is what it is.
I was gonna ask, like, so as an athletic trainer, you have to like obviously run onto the field, or I guess in this case rink, if someone gets injured. So like, how do you approach that situation?
You know what? I got a pair of shoes called Ice Bugs, and they have metal cleats. So I was a deer, if you will, the first few years. I'm real top heavy and real front heavy, so it kind of put me at a disadvantage. I had to walk like a duck and real careful, and then hope I didn't fall in front of the 10,000 peoples we had at our. It's been a fun challenge. But yeah, they basically have they're a Swedish company, I'm pretty sure, and they're basically made to have a bunch of little cleats, and they do a lot of ice running up there, and just to have traction, little studs. But it's been pretty fantastic to have them, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's awesome. One of my classmates actually used to work for, I don't know what the professional team is in Denver, but whatever team.
Avalanche?
Yes. Yeah. He worked for the Avalanche. I'm pretty sure he skates, but I haven't actually talked to him about it. So I'd be curious. I'm going to ask him now.
Most people do. It was amazing how little the hockey community hasn't played hockey. It's a real hard niche to get into. I kind of got very, very lucky to get into it, but you'd be amazed that I'd say 95% of the people that work hockey in any sort of capacity have played it as a kid growing up. And I just happened to be a part of the 5% that didn't.
Yeah. So how did you get from Arkansas to where you are now? How did you get to just where you are now from the beginning? That'd be a cool story.
Do we have enough time for this?
We have plenty of time.
Well, the biggest thing was I started athletic training at a tiny little school called Mount Union College. It's a small Division III school, and if anyone knows it, it's now called the University of Mount Union. They're known for their football. There's no good way around it. There was 2,200 people at the school when I was there, and we had 250 guys on the football team. So 1 in 10 was a football player on the campus. Mountain Union goes to the national championship every year. I was there for 4 years and we won 2 national championships and then we lost 2 national championships and we never lost a regular season during that time. And I think only recently did the 120 plus game streak get broken in the last couple of years. But long story short, as an athletic trainer, I was an athletic training student. I played football there. And I just, anytime I had a chance to move up the depth chart, I got hurt. And it just kind of took me 2 steps back. And I started realizing if I want to make it to the NFL, it's not going to be with this 285, 6-foot frame. So I'm going to have to pretty much find a different way to do it. And it just so happened that throughout all the opportunities of me getting hurt, I got a random call from one of my professors in athletic training in a kinesiology class. She says, keeps calling me and calling me. And I'm like, I'm in the middle of the class. I can't answer this. And she ends up running in, shooting into the classroom and says, hey, doc, I got to take him out real quick. She says, get in your car, go to Berea, Ohio. You need to start working for the Browns today. I said, what? Yeah, go. I'll get it all clear. I'll get it taken care of. Just go. And I say, well, okay, I guess I will. And basically I went up there and just drove the hour and a half up to work practice that day. And after that day, they said, man, you did a great job. And I really, you know, we really appreciate you stepping in like this. We're going to take care of you. And from then on out, I had an opportunity to go up every Wednesday. And then if they need me on a Monday, I skipped my classes and I made up the work. And then the next year we did the same thing. And then I said, I want to get my master's and I want to go big time D1, you know, like SEC, I want to do something huge, like Florida, Alabama, you know, South Carolina, Georgia. And he says, he had just come from Arkansas. His name is Joe Sheehan. He was the head athletic trainer there and still is. He says, what about Arkansas? And I was like, I've heard of Arkansas before. And that was the end of it. And I, you know, he picks up the phone and one thing led to another. And I got my master's in Arkansas and I, you know, my wife and I got married 2 days before we left for Arkansas. Mm-hmm. We were 22-year-old babies and basically boom, just got in the U-Haul, got to work. And my first day was 14 hours and I came home to my wife and all 4 of our parents just passed out on the couch. Yeah, that was kind of like I said, I told you I don't know how much time you have. I might have to speed it up a little bit more, but after I got done with my master's, the Browns called me back for another year where I was a seasonal intern and I worked full-time there for them for that year. And then afterwards we missed Arkansas big time, to say the least. I don't know if you know about Cleveland, but a lot more clouds than there are sunny days. So, and I hope I don't offend people when I said that, but I didn't realize it until I moved to a place like Arkansas where you can wear flip-flops year round and not have to worry about it. But moved back to work with Dr. Chris Arnold and Ramoni Lonin. Those were the big team doctors in Arkansas for the Razorbacks at the time. And Dr. Lonin is still there. I got to help him in a very indirect way. I got to help him set up a fellowship. And then from there, I also personally started the club sports athletic training, athletic medicine situation in Arkansas. Mm-hmm. And that was, correct me if I'm wrong, that was kind of like the first time I really got to know you guys.
Yeah, definitely.
That was my favorite thing I think I've ever done. And to finally bring it all the way back home, that was where I started working club sports hockey for Arkansas. And I realized, you know, I thought it was just a bunch of rich kids from Dallas who couldn't get into Texas. And then I realized that was what I thought when I first got there. And I came back and realized there's a sport where people actually care about the athletic trainer, and they really care about you as a person. And you know, their parents came to every game, and it was just such a fun and inviting atmosphere. And then not to mention, you know, in hockey, if you haven't gotten to break it down, these people are skating on knives that could kill you right then and there. They could hit you with a stick. You know, they got a weapon in their hands. They have a rubber bullet that they shoot 100 miles an hour. You have very little protection. And if you happen to slip and fall at a high speed or run into something at a high speed, it's solid glass, or it's a solid board, or it's a solid sheet of ice that feels like concrete, let alone if you accidentally hit another player going forward or backwards at the 20 to 30 mile an hour they can go.
Then you'll be punching each other.
Exactly. Yeah. Forget about the actual fighting that occurs. No, it was amazing to see a sport like this, and then have guys that were just absolutely ferocious on the ice and so unbelievably skilled and able to do what they were able to do in the manner they did. And this is Division III club, right? Like, we're not talking, this is not D1, you know, NCAA or major juniors or NHL. This is lower level. And it was just amazing to watch. And I got, you know, being analytical that I am, I had so much fun enjoying watching these guys do what they did. And I happened to have Caroline Lounsbury. She was another athlete that is straight out of Duluth, Minnesota. So I, you know, we had to talk like this a whole bunch, and, you know, it was really close to the border. And before you knew it, she was telling me everything about hockey. And then I got to, you know, I said, hey, I'm going to go check out over in Tulsa. That's the closest professional team. Let me go see what they do over there and help me improve my craft. And I went over there three separate games to see Stu Nichols, who, if you don't know anything about him, he was there for 20 years. He is an absolute stud at what he does. Just incredibly smart. And he stayed at James Anderson's house up in Omaha area every single year when the Arkansas Razorbacks would go up to the World Series for college baseball. But he's been doing PRI for over a decade at this point. And he was the guy that first, I was just dabbling, just baby dabbling in PRI at the time. And he pretty much showed me that, well, you can run an entire athletic training room just like that. And you can do everything just like that. And you can create a strength and conditioning program. You can do a sports program. You can do performance. You can do rehab. You can do enhancement of any sort right then and there, and make it very simplistic. Because, like, the guy had 5 pieces of equipment in his office. Like it was nothing. It was an open field of just nothing. He had a total gym and like three bands. It was amazing. And then, you know, he called later that year and he says, I'm out. I'm done. Job's yours if you want it. You know, like, if you want to take it, go for it. And I did. And I'm not letting go anytime soon. Love it.
That's awesome.
So that is the full story. So
that's awesome. That's awesome. So I connected with you probably like a few years back when you, I think, messaged me that you were studying some PRI after maybe I posted or whatnot. And we connected over PRI, and now we talk pretty frequently about PRI. And it's interesting. I'm an athletic trainer, but I don't work in that setting anymore. And people that study PRI and are athletic trainers always say, you know, it's too hard to implement with a team. Now, I'd love to hear, I know you implement it with your team, and I know you have really great results. So for those people, for those athletic trainers that take PRI courses and feel that they can't implement it with their team, can you explain a little bit about how you do that and why you have success with it?
Absolutely. The biggest thing that I've found success with is not in the medical side, it is in the strength and conditioning side. And a lot of the ways that it seems so hard to implement is because I don't have the good thing is I don't have someone that has a completely conflicting argument with me or doesn't have a completely conflicting attitude with me. The only other person that I have to worry about most of the time is me. And that was especially last year. I have another strength coach that he's a personal trainer, but he's a strength coach. And he runs a gym called Sports Performance Institute, SPI, out here in Tulsa. He comes and helps when he can. Last year, we were COVID restricted, so we had a tough time getting anyone to come help out just because of the risk of us being in a bubble. But in terms of what I was able to accomplish, I made sure that every one of my major lifts were still implemented. You still squat, you still deadlift, you still clean, you still do a lot of the normal lifts or a lot of the simplistic lifts or a lot of the core lifts that people need to have to maintain explosive strength and power. But then I also implemented a lot of single arm, single leg stuff, a lot of multiplanar movement activities. And in saying that, that sounds pretty simple and pretty normal as everyone else. The big thing after that was I added a PRI repositioning exercise at the end of each of them.
Gotcha.
And when I did it, if I did a deadlift, I was going straight from a deadlift to a pull reach where, right after, because you can't help it, you are in an extended state all the time and there's nothing we can do about it. And you can't block a puck in front of the net in a completely rounded out position like this and hope that you're staying in flexion, you're able to move properly. These guys have gotten where they are because of how good they are at what they do and how well they can compensate with what they do. And in saying that, I'm not really trying to focus on the 2 hours of the day that they're in training or skating on the ice. I'm focusing on the other 22 hours of the day where I can make sure that as they leave us, we want to get them as neutralized or as repositioned or as down-regulated as we could possibly get with them. It doesn't mean that I focus so hard on calming them down that I don't treat injuries, because you take a puck to the shoulder or to the arm or we have a lot of ankle contusions just from blocking shots. Maybe Ron knows differently, but there's not a lot of repositioning techniques that I can do to decrease that guy getting blasted in the leg by an 80 mile an hour shot from 10 feet away. And there's not a lot of repositioning things that I can do to help that. But what I can do is treat it and do what we do as athletic trainers and injury preventalists to do everything around there. And then when he's in the right position, he's in the best opportunity to recover. So that's kind of how I have implemented more and more and more. And it just seems to be much easier as a strength and conditioning thing. So I don't have to wait for them to get injured for me to teach them about PRI. If I can jump into it, I want to. I do long drive and, the guys always saw that, but that correlates heavily with what they do as rotational athletes in hockey. And what they saw me do is I'd go straight from swinging heavy and going through the position. And for the most part, I'm extended at the top and the finish of a golf swing. And it kind of took them a long time to realize that I went through a lot of flex states and a lot of core reposition exercises and being able to rotate my hips better than most of them. And they said, well, I'm just tight. And I said, you're tight for a reason. And if we can get you out of that tightness for the other 22 hours of the day, it might be able to help you take a faster slap shot or maybe accept a pass or be able to move a little easier and increase your speed for one, which, in the minor leagues, it's a developmental game. But yeah, I feel like I'm talking too much.
No, I actually had a question based on what you were saying, because so as athletic trainers, obviously people think about, well, people don't really know what the heck they do, but if people do know what an athletic trainer is, like in a loose sense, they think that they obviously deal with people when they get injured, which is absolutely true. But injury prevention and recovery is a huge part of that. And so like collaborating with the strength and conditioning team is huge and the doctors are huge. And I love what you said about like using PRI as more of like a, I think you said down-regulating, because Lord knows we're all up-regulated all the time. And it does, it's not necessarily from hockey. Like they need to be, you need to be like on, nervous system needs to be amped up for that, obviously. But like, even just like being in 2021, like in the middle of this pandemic, everybody's kind of like stressed the hell out. Right. So like, it doesn't even have to do with their sport necessarily, but can you explain a little bit more just to our audience about what you meant by like down-regulating them?
Absolutely. So just like you mentioned with the excited state of what our athletes are, I'll say athletes because that's who I primarily work with. The excited state that our athletes have, the number one thing that a lot of them struggle with, especially the younger athletes, older guys have kind of gotten good at that. You know, they result to pharmaceuticals potentially, or they result to things to help them relax at the end of a night or get through the night after a game. I struggled with it heavily in the first few years where, you know, we turned to basically, you know, muscle relaxers or Ambiens or things of that nature, or anti-inflammatories to help calm down pain, or booze. I mean, like, or other people do.
People in Washington can do other things.
I say in Washington.
Sure, no one in Oklahoma does. Definitely not.
It's legal in Oklahoma now.
Okay, but, there you go.
But yeah, no, yeah. Well, you know, weed.
Yeah.
Any kind of CBD.
I think people
THC
turn stuff to all sorts of different things. Drugs.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Psychedelics.
Oh my God, they're just slapping on Band-Aids on top 100%, of that. Like, yeah. It's just more stress. It drives me insane. Like there's so many solutions that are not that.
We had a joke a few years ago. We're going to name a title of the book from the stuff that we went through. It's called putting a Band-Aid on a bullet hole. And that's the, that's kind of, so whoever's out there, don't take that, please. Book is in writing.
We might put it as like the little like thumbnail of this episode. Actually.
Pretty, yeah, it's pretty funny.
I can respect that.
We'll put it in quotations.
So in terms of down-regulating, we had to find every single way we possibly could to get these guys to just relax and just to calm down. And like I said, the first thing, the number one priority I had was, you know, if we play four games in five nights, like we did that 6 weeks in a row last year where we did bang, rest, bang, bang, bang through the night, going to the next one, right? On to the next week. And we might have them at home. We might do four games in Utah. We might do four games in Rapid City, South Dakota, which I don't wish for anybody. I love you guys out there. No offense. Or we could go to Boise. We could go to Wichita. I mean, but the whole point was the travel is travel. And in all pro sports, travel is excessive.
It's tiring.
And it's exhausting. And so when you get to – say Indianapolis and it's 2:00 in the morning and we've just gotten done from a game, you know, that night in Fort Wayne, and we finally get there, or maybe Kalamazoo, whatever, and we get back to the hotel, everyone's tried to stay awake during the bus ride so they could go to sleep fine, and still in the morning I'm still going to have people saying, well, you know, that was a rough bus ride, you know, it was a horrible storm. I had to stay awake because my anxiety was above and beyond. I couldn't stop thinking about the game. And they didn't have a way to kind of calm down. And initially when I started doing this, I turned to a lot of dry needling. And that was a way that I could hit the major points of, you know, with Hoochie Dung's book on acupuncture. I really, really focused on the 24 main points in the front and 24 main points on the posterior. And that was my way of, that was a really good idea that Sue Falsoni showed me through her needling courses, that, you know, you find a way to downregulate them. And Eric Marsh, who's actually a hockey guy, he's been working at Air Force for the last 30 years. He was the one that really, really showed how that was effective and how that was a way to downregulate people and just say, all right, we're going to calm down, because you can't be excited if you have 24 needles in the front and 24 in the back when you flip them over after 15 minutes. you have to calm down. You can't get excited about it. And we're not trying to stab them and go crazy with them, but we want to put them in there and just let them relax. Well, I learned through PRI that if you do the same damn thing, let's make them breathe a few, you know? And it's a lot harder, you know, I Lisa Mangino with her children, and she gets to her patients where she gets to really work with them and has all these incredibly fun games that I got to hear about through one of her previous podcasts. Like that sounds like so much fun, but I think the hardest thing I have with my athletes is getting them to buy into the fact that a balloon would help them so well. So I do avoid that until I got them hooked in after the first exercise. Mm-hmm. So I say, all right, well, how about this? You know, I'm going to, you got right foot pain. Let's put you in a 90-90, you know, maybe a right hemi bridge and or a left hemi bridge and a right arm reach, you know, just go as basic, go step one as you possibly can. And when they realize, sorry, man, go ahead and stand up and walk. And they say, man, my pain's gone. Yeah. And then, you know, they do that when they get hurt or they do that when they're treating. And then before long, after a game, they say, Steve, what do you suggest? You know, what should I do to go to bed? I'm having trouble sleeping. I said, you remember that exercise? Can you try it for me tonight? Just this one time. You don't like it, don't do it. But if you like it, come back tomorrow and let me know, because I have a feeling you're not the only athlete on the team that's having this problem. And if this works, you telling me or telling them that it works would really go a long way in, you know, building up your teammates' ability to recover and us then winning games and thus, you know, having more in the tank and being able to do it. And like I said, that results in goals, that results in block shots, that results in wins. And so I had a lot of really, really good buy-in with that last year. We didn't do as well as we wanted to, but, you know, that's how it is some years. It is what it is, but we had in terms of what I do, we had a very successful year. We did not have a lot of injuries. We had a lot of Band-Aids that we kept getting through, but for the most part, there were not catastrophic injuries like usual, and there were not these killer long-term injuries like usual. And I truly believe that what I got to help with significantly improved the health and safety of our players. I'd love to say I have a ton of numbers with that, but but I can't sit here and say that. I look back on it, and I don't know how we went through six straight weeks of 4 to 5 games a week and just kept plugging through, but we got through it. And, you know, I asked Coach, who's been in pro hockey for 35 years, I said, you ever done something like this? Like, you ever been in this many games in this volume for this amount of time? He said, in all my years of pro hockey, I've never done this. So that was kind of eye-opening for me. I said, man, this just feels excessive. And he says, oh, it is. I said, it's pretty amazing they're still going, isn't it? He says, it's pretty good that they're still going. Yeah. So we don't have any more apartments.
Yeah. I was going to say, you said you don't have any numbers to back it up, which no, but what if you, I mean, you're in a setting in which you could probably, I don't know if you could get grant money, or if like somehow PRI could sponsor you, but if you were to get, you know, with your team, and with other teams, like it doesn't even not necessarily have to be hockey, but just other sports, like, I don't know, have some sort of like hypothesis where you're, you know, just decreasing gross injury rate or decreasing recovery time, you know, like obviously with a contact sport, it's, you can't prevent a lot of injuries, but like with the chronic stuff, you know, sprains, strains, and the like recovery time, things like that. I feel like, I mean, it could be really cool. And I think that one of the things about PRI that could be moved forward is having more research, because there's a lot of case studies, but there's not a lot of like, you know, the research that like everybody wants to see. So start it, do it.
You're beating me to the punch. The really fun thing on the side, outside of my hockey, if you will, I won't talk a ton about it, but what I get to do is I also, in my off season, I get to work with firefighters. And that's where a lot of we're actually getting grant money for that. We're actually getting an opportunity to build on that and to really start using Greater Tulsa and the Greater Tulsa area, the local fire departments, and I'll give a good shout out to Owosso Fire Department and Jinx Fire Departments. Those are the main ones we've been working with recently. But there's many more out there, and we're hoping to make the most out of it. But when I go there, I would say 99% PRI. And it's
firefighters love that. They do good with it.
That's been really exciting, because these firefighters, when I first get in there, they are as CrossFit games as you could ever possibly imagine. Mm-hmm. And then once I realize what they do, I'm like, well, yeah, no kidding. Like, the girls are throwing 40 to 80 pounds of equipment on the back of them. And they're, I don't want to say they're the weakest, because they're not. They're pound for pound, they're stronger than almost every one of these guys. But like, everyone, no matter what, top to bottom, everyone, no matter how big or small you are, you have to be able to carry the equipment. You have to be able to do that. And so when they get there and when they do that, it has been incredible. If they say, oh, I've had shoulder problem for a year, and I say, well, can I push on your ribs a little bit? You know, like, can I help you breathe a little easier? Can I help you inspire and expire a little easier, so you can finally relax? Because this year has been probably the lightest duty for me, because they're always out on calls. Anytime I go there to see them and to help out in any way I can, most of the time it's a ghost town, because they have been run ragged. And it is all I can do to help them just breathe a little easier and try to calm down and finally shut their eyes after some of the stuff that they might potentially see. That is a whole nother aspect that I don't, I don't have any experience in, and I don't want to. They are heroes in every way. And I don't mind saying it. Same with the combat vets that I've been very fortunate to get to work with. Cause half of the firefighters are former policemen or former vets. And it is amazing to see how well they can compensate, is the best way to put it, and how much I feel the need to want to help them change that, if you will. Let's get them out of a compensation pattern and get them into a pattern where they can finally downregulate themselves and finally get a good night's sleep without thinking about the demons they might have incurred in the past, and be able to relieve themselves from the stress that they constantly feel underneath in many different ways. I didn't want to make this sound like such a rough podcast, but it is, I hope you can see the passion I feel from these guys, because it's something, like I said, I never had the stones to be able to do what these people do on a daily basis. And I don't mind saying it. I am very happy to be the guy that helps patch up after the fact. But that is the big thing I could say, that with my athletes and in terms of down regulating, the breathing calms down. Good Lord, I got way off track, didn't I?
That's okay. Our whole podcast is tangents on tangents.
Well, to get back 15 minutes later to the down regulation question, you know, the biggest thing down regulation does is it lowers it changes the pH in the blood. It changes the way we perceive things. It slows heart rate. It slows respiratory rate. It slows all of the excitement that we have in front of us. And it allows us to just relax and just decrease the amount of stimulation we're taking in and decrease the amount of stimulation we're exuding into our body and we're portraying throughout our body. That has been the most beneficial part of what I've learned through this situation, through this science.
Yeah. That's awesome. I feel like more people could use that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So you also do the long drive stuff. So can you talk a little bit about your own PRI journey and long drive? He's like really great at like hitting I don't know much about golf. I just understand a little bit about the mechanics of golf and why getting into your left hip is very important and how PRI can help with golf. But We have somebody here that hits the – what do you hit the ball like some really hard speed? I don't know. You can explain it.
Long drive is you basically just – you're just driving, right?
You
you're
not slam like putting, the ball.
You're not playing a game.
You just hit it as hard as you can.
Yeah.
but the whole point – I mean, the Tiger – I don't know if you guys have ever heard of Tiger Woods, but I'm just kidding.
No.
So Tiger Woods said it best, I think, that I've ever heard it. The whole, and I'm sure he probably paraphrased it from someone else, the whole entire purpose of hitting it far is you need to be able to hit the center of the club face as hard as you possibly can. And when you think about it, with long drive, it's really, really easy to just swing as fast as you can or swing as hard as you can. There are a lot of people that are half my size that can swing way faster than me and are 10 times more accurate. I have no problem saying I'm very, very young into the sport. And this past weekend was a great, great reminder of that. Long Drive for Heroes is a company that I get to work with. Jay Malinichik is a retired military vet. He's a Purple Heart Award winner. And he is also a part of the John Daly and Ed Paluto Heart of a Lion Foundation, mm-hmm. Which John Paluto or Ed Paluto and you know, John Daly is obviously a Razorback, but mm-hmm. then I always enjoy that part of it. But
is there a drink named after him too?
What's that?
Wasn't there a drink named after him too?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Arnold Palmer, John Daly.
Yeah, that's just the same thing, but with vodka.
Oh yeah.
But Major Ed Paluto is, they are both combat vets, and through Jay, he has been incredible in coaching me and a few others in the area. And he's gotten us way up because we now swing the ball really hard. We are a lot faster and stronger through our workouts, but because, you know, and I owe a lot to Jay for this, but because we've been able to swing down through the ball with more efficiency, the ball goes a lot further with the flight path that we want, with the desired, you know, desired spin rates, with the speed that we want to go for. And, you know, more than honestly, the issue that we're dealing with is if we're 3 degrees off in any sort of direction, the ball's not going to go in the grid. The grid's usually between 50 and 60 yards wide, and it's way out there. It doesn't even start until 280 yards away from the shot. But yes, to get back to it, me using PRI, me using the inserts that I have is what I really love to talk about PRI. Our right side, the way we are constantly supinated on the right side. We're constantly rotated toward the right. We are oriented toward the right. And when we're oriented to the right, it makes it a lot harder for us to get to our left. It means we have a lot more moving parts that we need to tell the brain to adjust to, and allow us to get through that left side a lot easier. So that's kind of with PRI, I've been able to teach myself to better rotate. The inserts were something that I was able to do where I just stood on it, and through the sensation of feeling everything inside the inserts, it makes it 10 times easier for me to be able to tell my right foot that I need to use the correct muscles to pronate and to rotate over and to shift into that left hip. So when I'm going down through the ball, I have all of my weight working in unison as opposed to the right side kind of hanging back and staying back because the brain is telling it, well, I like the right side so much, I don't want to move out of it. And when that happens, and I don't have that restriction, and I get that freeing feeling, the ball goes a lot farther, and it is way more impressive when the ball goes over the net at a top golf than into the net. So I enjoy, that's the best way to say it. Obviously technology has a lot to do with it, with the clubs. Proper shoes has a lot to do with it. But yeah, more than anything, the hard work that goes into it, followed by, like I said, and I've done nothing but PRI exercises the same way I do with my hockey players. And my swing speed and everything has just gone way up. And the only way you can hit the ball straight is hitting the center of the face, but being able to do it at a faster rate is what makes the ball go further. But that was another fun tangent that I jumped onto today.
I'm telling you, our whole podcast is tangents. Literally, that's how we started day one. So we're all about that. So I think, I guess we talked about this a bit earlier about athletic training, but I want to ask you, what do you think, where do you think the profession of athletic training is going?
Well, I know for a fact I love athletic training, and I know that I don't know of any other profession that I would rather do. In saying that, I love that we went to a master's program for the fact that it is an opportunity to give us more credit. It's an opportunity for us to benefit ourselves in terms of being at a higher level, as it be treated like a medical professional, as opposed to just an athletic trainer or the team trainer. I have a really, really tough time with that, and I'll be the first person to admit it. In fact, over at Oklahoma State, we got to put a quarter in a jar every single time. We don't say athletic trainer, we say trainer.
That's awesome. Trainer. I love right? that.
But that's one of the little things that is, you know, kind of help remind us, guess what? Like we're one step under a doctor. Like, who's the first person that the doctor calls when we have an athlete that has a problem? It has to be us. You know, we are the first ones on the scene. You know, when we're in a sporting event, we're the first ones to have to know the knowledge of, you know, for the most part at Oklahoma State, we're going to have EMT knowledge out of every one of our students. We're going to be taking an EMR course to start each year when it's officially put in the curriculum, but they're going to need to know exactly what an EMT knows to start off everything on top of the education knowledge that we have as athletic trainers for injury prevention, business management, taping, prevention, rehab, so on and so forth, on top of the psychology that we need to know. But I will say, going through my athletic training program in 4 years probably was the best thing for me at that time. And it gave me a lot of wonderful opportunities. I mean, unfortunately, I had to get hurt to get these opportunities, but I had these wonderful opportunities, and it reminded me how important what our profession is, because without them, I might still be on the sidelines. But I truly, truly wish the one thing for our profession to start thinking about is caring about the rate of pay. You know, until we have athletic trainers that are willing or not willing to take the $30,000 job at their favorite university, we're constantly going to be behind the eight ball, and we're constantly going to be less than appreciated. And I sure, for knowing how I get to be treated and how special I get to feel from all of the athletes that I work with on a constant basis, and how much the firefighters, you know, appreciate what we give them at Oklahoma State and, you know, at the Owosso Fire Department in Jenks, like, if it weren't for that appreciation, I would think much less of myself. And unfortunately, that's how a lot of people probably feel, which is why they think they deserve those $30,000 a year jobs. And that's a big issue for me. What we know and how we learn and how all encompassing our realm is as athletic trainers, and what we could do, not what we have to do, but what we could do. Cause I know both of you are much more on the strength and conditioning side of things now. And like I said, I hope you don't mind me saying it. I take a lot of the information you guys put out on the internet and use it in my practices in my own ways. But this is something that everyone should really be appreciating more than they do. And unfortunately, a lot of athletic trainers go through their lives thinking, I just want to be a part of the team. I just want to help out the team. And they don't truly understand the value they bring and the value they could bring. And if they started looking at things as valued medical health professionals, it would go a long ways in terms of financially being more abundant and being able to pay the bills a little easier. And you know how it is, like they don't understand what they're worth. And until they finally do, until our professional finally does, we're going to be way behind.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And with the comment about like accepting money because you're working at a university, like from the outside and like, you know, as an undergrad, when I decided to do athletic training as my master's, I, you know, that was what I wanted. And it's not like I was like, ooh, I get to work with that. I mean, I did want to work with athletes, but it wasn't, I think a lot of people like just want to be a part of it. And then a lot of people from the outside think it's like the coolest thing ever. They don't realize like how much of a grind it is. Not only for like the athletic trainer, which is obviously what we are, but like the athletes, like that lifestyle, the coach's lifestyle, the athlete's lifestyle. I mean, that is, it is a lot of sacrifice. And so it takes a special kind of person, for sure to be able to do that. And I completely agree with you. They're way underpaid, kind of like how moms, like stay-at-home moms are kind of underpaid.
100%.
For their amazing job that they do. But yeah, definitely a lot of work to be done.
I also think if I get to add on to that, I also think the level of sacrifice the families go through. Like I said, my very first day working at Arkansas as a graduate assistant back in, 2010, mm-hmm. way back when, you know, my very first GA day, I worked a 14-hour day of just physicals alone, nothing else, physicals. And it was 14 hours. And then the next day I worked 15 hours. And then the next day I worked 16 hours. And then the next day I worked 16 hours. And before long, I had 120 hours in that first week. And then camp continued in that same fashion. And, you know, we're working for a month straight, 120 hours a week. And you know, I've been married for a month at this, or for 3 months at this point. And it's just kind of like, holy cow, like, what did I get into? What am I doing here? Like, the Browns weren't even this intensive. And these poor kids are here at 6 a.m., and the last lift is like 6 p.m.
Yeah,
after practice or something, or they have films or meetings, and I'm like, it's June. What are we doing? but no, I mean,
football is life. It's the SEC. Exactly.
Football is life.
Football is life.
Danny Rojas. That was my little Ted Lasso. that's exactly it. And you know, I have the opportunity now to remind these students that I get to work with. You know, we have 12 students with the Oklahoma State University right now. And these 12 students, you know, that's the way that I'm kind of looking at. This is how I approach them, is that, you know, you're going to be paid what you're worth. And if you don't think you're worth anything, you know, you're letting everyone down, especially yourself. Like, you're letting your kids down. You're letting your family down. And you need to know that. And all the other people that have sacrificed before you to make sure that you have these opportunities. And it just kind of, it's a constant reminder to them that, you know, you're going to have an opportunity to mentor people, and they're going to learn from you. And you're going to be mentoring, you know, many, many people throughout, whether they're athletes, students. You never know who you are going to inspire, and you never know who you're going to have see you as an example, whether you want to or not. And so if you sit there and say, yeah, you know, I worked for this $22,000 for this hockey season. Yeah, let's do it. Then they see that you don't value yourself. And that is, maybe not directly, but indirectly. But it really, that's the stuff that I really make sure that these guys are hearing, is that we have an opportunity to do something very special here. And we have an opportunity for you guys to move forward, you know, as medical health professionals for the rest of your careers, where you're going to change lives daily. You're going to save lives daily. You're going to help that person that might've needed a hug that day, or might've needed a pat on the back, or might've needed an ankle tape. And who knows, that ankle tape saved them from breaking an ankle that day, and they only sprained it, and they still have that scholarship down the road. I mean, there's a million things that could happen that if we're, you know, treat it with the respect we have, we're going to treat the profession with the respect it deserves. And then, yeah, we're not going to miss little things.
I think we do need to just start fostering more of a culture of pride, like when people are in school. I mean, we didn't really, it wasn't that we didn't at Arkansas, but I just feel like you get so lost in like your clinicals and being like, I worked with football, so I know how it is. And it's really easy to like kind of lose that sense of pride. So I think programs could really benefit from having, you know, more like, I don't know, in services or something, that would be a good way to like remind students like, hey, this is how valuable you can be, because I think that that's so important, especially when people graduate. But we have a couple other questions for you.
Absolutely.
The first one is, where can people find you?
On Instagram more than anything. Instagram, I have a couple of them. Lintern AIC is my handle for my business. And I've had an LLC for years, but I just started it up, and I wanted to make sure that it was something very, very PRI based and very organized around that, because that will be all I do for that. Mm-hmm. In terms of my other personal handle, it's Steve Lintern Performance. That's where I get to show pictures of my kids and get to appreciate them. And, but it's much more personal life based. But you can reach me at either of those, and I help out anyone willing to work with me.
Amazing. And you're in the Tulsa, Oklahoma area. So people that need a PRI provider there, you are on their webpage. So we will link that as well.
Absolutely.
And then our very important last question is, what do you do, maybe every day, maybe not every day, you've listened to our podcast, so you know this is coming, to move your brain and move your body?
Well, I listen to podcasts every single day, and my favorite way to listen to podcasts is wearing a super heavy sweatshirt from the Browns from 2009 when Reebok was there. It's like 3 pounds heavier than any other sweatshirt I have, but it's like a weighted blanket out in 100-degree heat mowing the lawn. That is when I like to listen to my podcasts and whatnot. But on top of that, I swing every day. I have about 1,000 different swing training tools that I try to play with, and if I can't go out and hit the ball, I will be doing that instead. Get my workouts in when I can, but swinging is the absolute. That's the thing that kind of lets me go into my happy place, Happy Gilmore style.
That's awesome.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on, Steve. It was great to see your face. It's been years, really.
I know, my goodness. A little bigger than the last time I saw you, I have a feeling, but I should have never learned all those fantastic microbreweries out in Fayetteville area now.
Yeah, and the barbecue.
Fayetteville is the best. I miss Fayetteville. I think if people listening haven't been to Fayetteville, Arkansas, they should check it out. Because I think I'm from New York, but thinking like going to Fayetteville.
We both loved it.
My friends thought I was insane. And then they came to visit and they were like, oh my God, this is so cool. So it is a amazing spot. So yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you for coming on our show. We really appreciate
it. My pleasure. It. Thanks for having me. It's been a blast.
It was fun.
Absolutely. We'll see you.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Move Your Brain, Move Your Body podcast. Join in every week as we release new episodes.
Subscribe or leave us a rating at Apple Podcasts. If you have questions or topics to cover, please email moveyourbb@gmail.com or follow us on Instagram @moveyourbb.